What feels like two lifetimes ago, I started getting letters from some sort of nebulous, hard-to-understand legal situation indicating that I was liable for some sort of damages, setting off a 15-year epic of letters, accusations, and a lawsuit for $2 billion. What feels like one lifetime ago, I was told that my talk at DEF CON was going to be 20 minutes shorter because of fire rules and having to make the audience leave and come back again, causing me to deliver one of my standard rambling speeches in a much more tighter form and resulting in a talk called That Awesome Time I Was Sued for $2 Billion. Clocking in at 2 million views, this is apparently how my name gets around to a lot of people, inviting them to find out what other things this guy is up to. It's been a little more than 10 years since I gave that speech. I thought I'd give an update on both perspective and additional thoughts on Paul Andrew Mitchell. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Eric Vitello, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. The most interesting difference between then and now for me in the Paul Andrew Mitchell saga is exactly how much of what he was doing and what he was a part of are simple terms in the modern era. Let me very quickly revisit this for people who've not heard of this part of my life. A person named Paul Andrew Mitchell, calling himself a private attorney general, wrote a book called The Federal Zone. In 1994 and 1995, he chose a, at the time, unusual way to distribute it. He put it on floppy disks and uploaded it to various BBSs and websites and online services and asked that if you read it and you found value in it, to send him money. However, since the book is objectively worthless, he ended up not getting a whole lot of money and then went on to various mailing lists and demanded that his book be taken off the internet. At the time, there weren't many of these sort of libraries like textfiles.com, collections of files and various online writings being put into an easy-to-download website. There were a few, and this writer, Paul Andrew Mitchell, made it his quest to first write to, then threaten, then harass, then sue anybody he perceived as having stolen his openly released and then withdrawn book. Whenever an address was associated with any sort of website, he would send them increasingly threatening letters, embossed with a seal of something called the Supreme Law Firm, and indicating in various degrees that a lawsuit would be filed and that they would be liable for at first thousands, then hundreds of thousands, then later millions and billions of dollars. To fast forward, he ended up actually suing in a California court these 15 people, plus hundreds of John Does. And due to a variety of terminal mistakes in his legal process, it was thrown out and he was declared a vexatious litigant, which means he can't easily open up court cases again. I didn't send a lawyer because there were enough lawyers involved, so I didn't actually pay any sort of money in any way to have anything resolved. I did, however, register paulandrewmitchell.com and put up his dozens and dozens of pages of legal documents that he had sent me, along with small amounts of commentary and a sense of conspiracy and mystery about the whole thing. Time, of course, gives us often the tools and words to describe things that at the time seem unique, undescribable, absolutely impossible to share with others. Paul Andrew Mitchell would be immediately classified as a sovereign citizen, a person who has taken a artistic, we'll say, reading of laws, mores, symbols, and justice, so that they themselves are not entitled to have to pay taxes, to have to file certain kinds of papers, or any of a dozen other responsibilities that any regular person would consider the natural way of things. Under this way of thinking, a sovereign citizen believes that the misuse of symbols or failing to indicate certain readings of law indicate that many things that we hold for granted, like collecting taxes or having officers of the court or warrants, are in fact invalid and can be ignored. Naturally, tax avoidance is the number one priority in many of these cases, although, if you talk with them, they'll often give you other reasons, indications of living a true, free life, living in a society that is the natural order of what a supreme being wished to be. The magician and historian Ricky Jay once said that the powerhouse of magic is a disbelief that anybody would spend the amount of time on preparation that the magician has. In that same way, it's unfathomable to people that somebody like Paul Andrew Mitchell would honestly spend day after day, week after week, creating thousands of pages of semi-accurate citations of legal rulings to indicate something as simple as tax avoidance. But the fact is, this was and is, to this day, his shtick, and the shtick of many sovereign citizens. Again, when my speech came out in 2009, I talk about Paul Andrew Mitchell almost like he's an alien, like somebody unlike anyone I've ever met before, a unique property, a person beyond reckoning, beyond scrutability, who was working along ley lines and concepts far outside of the mainstream. But the fact is, looking back, there have been, and there have always been, people who look at constructions of society and decide, in various ways, to fight it. Some of them do it by becoming elected and passing alternate laws that reinterpret what was there before, while others decide to make themselves into constant, unending irritants, providing themselves with causes that go on for all their life. In many cases, these outsiders, these folk lawyers, have a point. An injustice may exist within the code of law, and they seek to have it changed or completely stripped from the books. However, like any sort of crusade or cause, there's always the potential to both metastasize, to go into directions that are not just outside the mainstream, but outside society's bounds, or to find yourself allied with people who are coming in from a completely different direction, but in one or two points share your viewpoint. Paul Andrew Mitchell spent years fomenting his scam. The idea, I think, was to eventually get a payoff from a large media company, to be paid some amount of money, whether it was $10,000 or $1 million, just to go away, as a nuisance. Endlessly filing lawsuit threats and sending letters, I think his ultimate plan was some sort of low-level extortion. I'm not sure if he started out that way, but after years of making large legal documents, of creating and describing in great deal triplicate damages, and sending out what must have been hundreds of letters and packages all around the country to people who he thought were either sympathetic to his cause or worthy of being sued, I think it became a crusade for him. If you do something long enough, you can convince yourself that you're doing something valid and planning to make a change for the good. For me, of course, textfiles.com had always been a devil's bargain of feeling like I was getting information out there and also exposing myself to all sorts of parties with opinions very different than mine, and especially opinions on whether I should have existed with this site in the first place. Paul Andrew Mitchell was not a singular figure causing me grief. He happened to be one of the few that were causing me legal issues, but he was not alone in sending me letters telling me that things that I was doing, both by providing these files and sharing them where I did, was in some way bad. I got phone calls, I got letters, emails. Some of them, I think, crossed a line from mere criticism into threats. But I considered that part and parcel of being a large public website. It stood to reason that some people would have negative experiences going there. To this day, an occasional file will find itself on Hacker News or Reddit, completely stripped of the context of being from a text files website, putting up files from 20 years ago, and it'll just be linked there, as if it's something people are providing in a contemporary space. The responses, therefore, run the gamut. After his case was thrown out, I kept an eye on Paul Andrew Mitchell, registering a domain so that there would be a small lighthouse out in the darkness of the net, letting people know that this person who was writing to them wasn't just an anomaly, wasn't targeting them specifically, had been doing this for decades. And every once in a while, people will link me to antics being done by Paul Andrew Mitchell in the present day. There'll be some sort of court case in a small town where he is filing concerns or coming to meetings and raising issues that completely confuse the government there. His stage, in other words, seems to have moved down to summer stock and small plays instead of the Broadway of law that he was attempting before. Naturally, he's useful as a podcast interview. He'll go on for hours, making it sound like everything he's saying is completely valid, and giving somebody hungry for an in-depth interview that feels like it was researched, the ad clicks and the attention that they crave. But here, at this modern time, in my own podcast, I'll simply say that, looking back, I have finally taken away the one aspect of Paul Andrew Mitchell that perhaps gave him some level of excuse and value. It turns out, in the aggregate view, that Paul Andrew Mitchell was and is nothing special. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoianu, Mark Pilgrim, Peter Healy, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Matt Reynolds, Manxalot, Sean Kelly, John Sturm, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Every once in a while, I wander over to one of the two YouTube videos of my presentation at DEF CON, and I read the comments. It's interesting to me that people who weren't even born when most of what's in that speech happened, have very strong opinions on me, on what's being said, and on Paul Andrew Mitchell himself. And I occasionally comment and give corrections if somebody's come to the wrong conclusion. One of the most enjoyable things that I find when I read these comments is when people realize the true message within that presentation, which is never, ever go it alone. Never suffer in silence and solitude simply because you feel like what you're worried about isn't valid, or that others shouldn't be brought into it, or that this is something you have to do and nobody else should have to worry. I can tell you that as the years go by, the one true piece of advice that we are in this together and that there are people who love you and want to help you, and will listen to your fears and help assuage them, give you perspective, that safety net, those held hands that will catch you in your fall, are real, in people you would have never suspected were there at your side the whole time.